This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Resolute Square.
There was also maintained what was called an enemies list, which was rather extensive and continually being updated.
Democrats want Republicans dead.
Where I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose any voters, okay?
The women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions.
On January 6th of 2021, you had tens of thousands of people peacefully protesting.
No, it's not a right-wing conspiracy theory. It's not QAnon. It's real.
I'm Rick Wilson, and this is The Enemies List.
Our guest today on The Enemies List is Dan Fajella. Dan is an artificial intelligence expert. He understands the intersection and the impact of the emergent AI impact on business and the economy and society. And it's a subject that I'm increasingly interested in because I truly believe we're unable to catch up right now with the technological innovations happening in AI. So Dan, I want to really welcome you to the show and tell us a little bit about what we're missing with the speed and the change in AI right now. In impacting our economy and our workforce and everything else.
Yeah, sure. There's 5,690 directions we could go there. I'm going to go ahead and take what I think you want me to say, and then we're going to go ahead and see what parts of that you want to poke on into.
Sure.
So just for real robust clarity here, I'm a market research sort of professional. So my you know, 90 hours a week is talking to heads of AI at Raytheon and US Bank and CIOs at Goldman Sachs and then the entire ecosystem of vendors. So who are the big buyers, the big sellers of these technologies, all the way up from the Googles and the OpenAIs, all the way down to the smaller players. So my vantage point is from there. It's not necessarily writing the code. It's more looking at where is this stuff hitting the ground running? And I think that's kind of what you're asking. Two things I think are really important. So one is that at least right now, we're not seeing AI lead to rapid and ravenous layoffs and disruption across, you know, every job market that's out there. However, it does feel increasingly like it is a matter of time. So I've been in this space for 10 years, and it is only now that the vendors in the space are able to sort of very openly say things like, yeah, you know, we might need less FTEs for that. You know, if you're selling into the Fortune 500, Rick, you can probably imagine, you kind of have to sound very tame. So you have to say things like, oh, AI is only going to augment people and happy-go-friendly words and things like that. But I think there is a bit of a confluence of understanding that in certain areas, we will be able to slough off pretty significant roles. I think within the next 3 years, those waves will hit. We can talk about what's going to drive those waves. There's like a lot that we have to say about sort of what's going to be those dominoes that fall. The other side of the coin that's important to talk about, though, Rick, and I really don't want to leave off the table, is the sort of impact of this technology in our day-to-day lives. So there's the blooming of artificial general intelligence, that is to say, something more capable and powerful than humanity writ large. You know, we're not 6 months from that, but when I was polling researchers 8 years ago, 5 years ago, 2060, 2065 is kind of what would come up. Now a lot of people are 2029. Timetables have really moved on sort of when we might reach that. But even before we get there, generative AI, Rick, has a pretty substantial near-term impact on sort of how we live our day-to-day lives.
No doubt.
There's going to be a pretty robust transition into kind of living in virtual spaces to fulfill not just relaxation, entertainment, but maybe even relationships. So we can go there too. Let me know what direction you'd like to fire off into.
Well, I want to start out with, you know, explaining a couple things to folks who my audience tends to be more political and news-oriented, commentary-oriented. And I think explaining that right now we're in the We may get to AGI in some point, much sooner than we used to think about. It may be in the 2025s, 2027s, 2028s. Who knows? It's the old Ray Kurzweil thing of it's both the amplitude and the frequency of the changes are increasing at a logarithmic rate now.
Absolutely. I mean, Kurzweil, every morning people should wake up and say, how was that guy as right as he was?
I went back recently and I reread The Singularity Is Coming from 1998, was it? Seven, something like that?
Wild.
And oh my Lord. And I read it at the time and I just reread it about, I don't know, maybe a couple weeks ago. And I was like, good God, he's so on the money. Yeah. And it really
is. Say what you will about him. He's been on point about a lot of things.
He's eccentric, but he's a brilliant eccentric He's somebody people should know about. But so what I wanted to talk about a little bit is folks don't understand, I think, the differences between the language model ChatGPT stuff and the generative stuff from DALL-E and Midjourney and all that. They sort of see that's entering people's consciousness and lives, and it's becoming something in business and life and politics and everything else. The next step doesn't have to be, you know, AGI, general intelligence, or ASI, but it is going to start ripping apart any business or industry that can be digitized or coded. Or, I mean, we're very much approaching the end of the line for CPAs and lawyers and a whole bunch of other areas of human conduct where they're not going to be completely out of the loop, but they're going to be largely taken out of the things that the cost per transaction in those things is going to become so diminished with AI that you end up and a whole spectrum of creative forces as well. Has anybody thought about how that restructures American economic and corporate life, you know, in great depth?
I think there's a tremendous amount of thought here. I think very few people are bold enough to make really hyper accurate prognostications. For me, for example, let's just talk legal. I think there is a possibility that there's vastly less of that for humans to do. It's also the possibility that generative AI makes that in certain areas of law wildly more complex. Think about a document written for the express purpose of representing my interest while also not tipping any red flags for the party that needs to countersign.
Right.
And think about how robust I could go on that if it was written by a machine hyper-optimized for that objective.
Right.
And then think if the person that's reviewing that is also a machine looking to do the same thing, which in other words, not really showing their teeth and claws necessarily, but really optimizing for their own needs. There might need to be a lot of humans behind the steering wheel figuring out, like, how do we take these freight trains and combine them together and actually get a deal signed? That said, you know, legal, I'm not saying those folks are safe, but I'm saying it's tough for me to know exactly where the dominoes are going to fall. I think the thing that's going to get it done. So already, if we go before ChatGPT, there are many departments and divisions within big legacy enterprises that could be vastly smaller than they are, but they're not. Because there's a lot of incentives at play here. If I run a fiefdom in a call center, I don't want half the people in my call center, right? Because then I have a less cool job or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe it feels like my own job has been diminished. And certainly the folks working at the call center aren't really all that into it. So there's these strange tension forces. And the two things that are really going to start knocking dominoes are when startups burst their way into the space and just are doing the same thing with 1/20th of the effort and certainly the humans.
Right, so no legacy overhead of well, yeah, we've always had 500 people doing this, and now you guys have six, what?
Yeah, totally. So there's going to be the bottom-ups approach, and then there's also going to be sort of the more nimble first movers within the enterprise. So let's say if I'm an insurance company and I start really, you know, maybe I'm hitting some economic straits and I've really got to start sloughing some folks off and we've really got to redesign how we do underwriting, how we handle claims. I might be a first pusher to really get that stuff restructured. And by the time I do it, if performance and speed and all that stuff is better and cost is vastly lower, it's going to be essentially impossible for the rest of the players to follow suit. But that tension of not wanting to lose our jobs and really enterprises being very resistant to transformative change as opposed to small incremental change is what has kept that dam standing back. But I think it seems more and more self-evident that some of those dams are going to bust. Exactly what industry is first, tough to say. Some of it's going to have to do with cultural and arbitrary things, like whoever wants to pull the trigger. But there's a pretty wide consensus that dam will be busting in the years ahead here.
Well, I do a lot of, you know, I have a couple outside of politics, a couple projects percolating for years out in Hollywood. And I will tell you the sense of absolute terror at every level of the enterprise. And I spoke to a guy a couple weeks ago, but producers whose name you would know, who said, look, if it turns into that $100 million movie that I want to make looks exactly the same as real life,
give me a break. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And the movie is made with by a bunch of guys with computers, and he's like, and it costs $5 million, and it's basically renting Amazon time and coders, then he goes, I will tell you all the business side in Hollywood, they will not care anymore about the celebrity system. They won't care about creative. Everything from the script to the end point will be to the marketing will be driven that way. And he says it's interesting because it's like Hollywood loves its culture. It loves the business culture of itself, but it will swallow that as a sort of, you know, it will take a last dose of whatever the drug is, but it will kill the business as we know it today. And I think that's where so much of this ends up going when we get to artificial general intelligence, especially. You touched on something recently on your Twitter feed, and you've mentioned it before, that we're going to reach a political singularity. And for the last, call it, you know, 150 years in American life, our politics have rotated around two big questions: America's role in the world and America's economy. And all these different approaches, left, right, center, to all these things. But you talk about a political singularity where the focus of government in large measure becomes, what is this post-AGI, post-humanity moment like? Talk to me a little bit about where you see that going, because and that's even, I think, harder to predict in some ways than the economic impact, but you know, having been in government before, I can tell you it does not like to change at all.
Well, yeah, I don't expect the government likes to change. I mean, we work with plenty of vendors that sell into the DOD. We work with plenty of vendors that sell into, you know, even more boring parts of the government agencies than the DOD. DOD, actually, all things considered, kind of more exciting. There's certainly some areas where they've at least got a couple dollars to rub together, a couple nickels to rub together. But yeah, the government, I don't suspect, will want to change. Here's what I think goes down. I think that we have one or two more. So ChatGPT happened, right? So I've been banging away on the keyboard for 12 years about this stuff, post-human intelligence, et cetera, et cetera. I figured it was maybe 50% likelihood within my lifetime, but that I'd see us get pretty close probably before I died. Now I'm more or less convinced. I'm not dogmatic about it. Like, oh, it's going to be this year. Like, I'm not that guy. But I do think it's increasingly more likely. ChatGPT happened all of a sudden, you know, random buddies from college or, you know, people that I knew back in the day would be like, how about all that? You know, like now they'll come out of the woodwork and say, like, geez, you know? And normally it's about jobs, right? People are not thinking about the grand existential concerns, which honestly, I think it's just too much for the, I think it's too much staring into the void. I think people don't want to do that. But honestly, they should be, frankly. Every now and again, someone will come out of the woodwork. We need another one or two big pops like ChatGPT before, you know, the total man on the street, like, you know, my parents in a 4,000 person town are like, what is going on?
Right.
And at which point it won't be the government loving change. I don't ever suspect that will be the case. I suspect it will be the populace writ large, the everyman, absolutely coming to the conclusion that whether we build the deity and who controls it / how is it birthed are the only things that matter. Is it us? Is it China? Is it this lab? Is it that lab? Is it, you know, do we allow it to go this far or not this far? You know, who's pulling the trigger here? Is this an arms race? These become sort of the only things, because whatever they're going to do with the septic system in your little town outside of Hoboken or something, just less important than if the grand intelligence rips its way into reality and blows as far beyond us as we have beyond sea snails over the course of an 18-month period. So that's the political singularity. It ain't the government love and change, Rick. It's the everyman coming to the conclusion that, you know, death, or for some of them, I'm sure it'll get religious and they'll say salvation, is sort of at the brink.
Support for Rick Wilson's The Enemies List comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/Wilson. That's odoo.com/Wilson. Odoo. Modern management made simple. We're seeing that creep into people's minds slowly but surely, where they think in some ways that the algorithmic things they're seeing now are artificial intelligence, where they think that, oh, Facebook knows what I want to see, or TikTok knows what I want to watch. And I think that it's like that they're like just barely awake about this right now. And as it becomes more impactful, it's funny because I wrote a book about the 2020 election way back in 2018, and I predicted that we were going to end up in 2020 with a lot of deep fakes. Now, I was a little ahead of the curve, but there will be a moment this year where there will absolutely be video produced that is indistinguishable, that is 8K res, and it looks just like every single, you know, hair and feature of Joe Biden, and he's going to say something outrageous, or of Trump, and he's going to say something outrageous, and it's going to all blow in the last 4 weeks of the campaign, and it's going to just explode into a world where we don't know what's real, where we can't determine what's real. And I think that'll probably shock a lot of people. And the transition from this highly mediated society that we live in now with social media will be even more shocking to people. I think there's going to be a very bad future shock driven by this election cycle.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
I do think future shock is, you know, I haven't read the book, by the way, but
I haven't since I was 12 years old, but anyway,
yeah. I'm extremely not well read in sci-fi, but I'm wildly well read in history, and then talking to the people actually adopting the tech today. And I like combining those two things more than stories personally, just a personal choice.
Right.
But with all that said, yeah, there's going to be a tremendous amount of that. We'll see what goes down with this election. The tech is there to do what you said. I would have expected it in the last election more so than we did for sure as well. But the tech is there. I think what's really important for people to understand, you talked about something, you know, oh, Facebook recommending things is AI. It is. And for most of us, Rick, probably you too, our screen time has stayed pretty steady the last 10 years. Maybe better and better smartphones have bumped it by half an hour or an hour. But like the amount of time staring at screens last 10 years hasn't felt like a lot of change. Amount of times staring at screens where what is on the screen is programmatically conjured based on you, the user. Rick, it go like this, you understand? It go like this. Now, people don't feel that, Rick. People don't understand that, Rick. But that's what's happening. Now, it's not that long from now when that same thing happens, but it's not programmatically bringing you somebody else's content. It's programmatically conjuring content specific to your needs. So my suspicion could be wrong. My suspicion is that all of the human drives, relaxation, entertainment, novelty, could be sexual here, not going to play any games. I think we're going to see a lot of innovation.
Porn always leads the way.
Like it or not. Yeah. Like it or not. I got lengthy essays on this one.
Mm-hmm.
But not because I like the topic, but just because it's like, this is a portent.
It's a real thing.
What it is. If you can strap in, and essentially, there's only one market in the world. You could say, oh, there's a market for food and for this and for that. There's really just a market for a desired state change. People want to feel better. They want to. They have something they want to feel, and they look for that. Look at the amount of money spent on pharmaceuticals.
Sure.
You know, the big drug spending is all on state change, right? Illicit drugs, same deal. State change is the name of the game. When you can say, geez, I want to be relaxed. Right now, what do I do, Rick? I go walk outside. I bring a paper book maybe sometimes. Maybe I'll listen to a podcast. I'll walk in nature. It's not going to be wildly far from a time where I can strap on a headset, and it's so well calibrated to everything that's ever relaxed me in that VR state, and it's so calibrated to my biofeedback that my relaxation is much more reliable when I strap in than when I walk outside. Same thing about maybe being confident or feeling enthusiastic. Same thing about maybe a sense of adventure. You know, maybe I like to watch this Jackie Chan movie. Man, there's going to be things way better than that. Sure. To your point, Rick, you brought up, oh, what if we can conjure a movie and it's just as good for $5 million? The actual future here is
for $5,000.
Everybody gets their own damn movie.
Right.
It's an audience of one. We swim in our programmatically generated spaces. And I hate to tell you, relationships are going to be a big part of that. There's a lot of early portents for romantic relationships, friendships, etc. If you can have someone that doesn't have any of their own agendas, they don't want to borrow your car, they don't want to ask you to move their sofa, they don't, you know, hit on your ex-girlfriend, right? None of that stuff. And they give you sparklingly brilliant business advice every time you ask. They make you laugh and feel good whenever that's what you need in your heart. They encourage the parts of you that you're trying to grow in like a way that feels really meaningful. There comes a time where you ain't really talking to your regular friends anymore. Just like right now, Rick, you probably don't listen to the AM radio that much. And you might not watch TV as much as you do the internet, because gradually, as it better satisfies the drives, we adapt it. And so I think people have to look very squarely and dead in the eyes about the fact that relationships are absolutely on the table in terms of replacement with AI over the course of the next half decade to decade.
So there's a lot of stuff about this that as humans, we have trouble. We talked about Ray Kurzweil earlier, and people have trouble with logarithmic change. They have trouble with understanding how that compounds so quickly. And, you know, I don't want to end this on a down note, but it's kind of a note I think people need to start thinking about a little bit. Right now, you and I are still talking about changes that we can understand, that we understand right now. There is, and I'm always uncomfortable with the word singularity. It always kind of like gives me a little like, eh. But is a moment if we have what they call the hard takeoff.
Yep.
And artificial general intelligence becomes self-improving rapidly, where folks, it won't be like they spawn, it won't be like 1,000 coders building something. It'll be an artificial intelligence program that says, part of my drive is to improve myself. And so it spawns 1 billion of itself, and they all work on making themselves, the next version, better, faster, smarter. The hard take, I mean, Werner Vengo one time said that you could have this happen in 100 hours if it really took off. There is a little bit of, and I don't want to sound apocalyptic about it, but there is a little bit about, we could have ended up producing something that so far exceeds our ability to understand it that, you know, it thinks of us not like ants, but like bacteria.
I really like the fact that you're putting this on the table, because I'll tell you right now, Rick, I think most people coddle themselves. They swaddle themselves like an infant to sleep with friendly ideas such as, surely, no matter how far beyond human intelligence we go, everything will see us as an equal and we'll all share in this democratic world where we love and respect one another, right? They have these weird frozen values that allow them to go to bed at night. These are people with children, right? They want to think their children are going to grow up. I spent all the money on the lake house. My kids better be able to enjoy that in 20 years. I can't be believing things that are going to mess with that.
Right.
So I think people don't look squarely at this, but I would absolutely concur. Where do you want to go with that? Because I can vibe with that with you. I can poke into some specific elements, but I basically agree.
Explain to folks what the hard takeoff might look like in a scenario where the only real limiting factors – I can't remember who wrote this, but someone said the only real limiting factors on a hard takeoff would be the capacity of the power grid.
Yeah. Compute and power. And by the way, I have an essay called The Substrate Monopoly. If anybody wants to Google Substrate Monopoly, I think we're already going to see this game. I think whoever owns the hardware that houses the bulk of human experience will inherently own the hardware that houses probably the strongest material for AI and
sure.
will be very much in the runnings for building AGI. And so the final peak of the dominance hierarchy on the planet called Earth among hominids is essentially having monopoly of that substrate. We're about to see so much compute come online, Rick. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
We're about to see companies get founded in Qatar and in all kinds of wacky countries where you can pump energy out of the ground and rip as many GPUs as you want to rip, Rick.
Yep.
And we're going to be talking about doing that in, you know, a year and a half, have three times more compute, you know, than we have today. I mean, it might be a slight exaggeration, not a gigantic one though. We're about to see this stuff rule the world. So what does this look like, you know, if a hard takeoff actually occurs? I think there's a number of reasons I'm not worried about it tomorrow. But I do think that when AI is embodied, let's say we got 1 billion robots doing manual jobs, manufacturing mm-hmm. jobs, home care, all that stuff, all that data is getting drunk in by some set of systems somewhere, maybe not all the same one, but some set of systems somewhere, the amount of raw interface with reality, the amount of raw compute, the amount of raw power that these systems could have, hypothetically, to Vinji's point, and I don't know exactly what this would look like. I think it's apt to say I am speaking about scenarios that are like if a sea snail was speaking about, you know, the intricacies of the electrical wiring in a hospital.
Right.
Like that's kind of what we're talking about here. But what it could look like is Rodentia, let's say, you know, 5 million years ago, Rodentia exploding up to the level of man mm-hmm. and all of our civilization and airplanes and jets and boats and paved roads and chemicals in the water and all that stuff over the course of like, you know, who knows, maybe a 2 month period or something along those lines. In which case, it is pretty ridiculous to suspect that our individual instantiations of consciousness would survive such a gigantic leap upwards as the one that I just articulated happening as quickly as it would happen. And again, I think people write this off entirely, but there are more and more folks like Bengio and Hinton and some of the top researchers. We just spoke with Bengio recently on the show who agree that these could be real risks. So that's how I would imagine it might happen.
Right now, people are struggling with a human set of policies about like, oh, should we do universal basic income if AI, you know, reformats the economy? How are we going to do this in a post? And the weird thing about AI is it's really going to blow out a lot of the upper middle class jobs and middle class jobs in this country rather than, you know, there's still going to be a lag on physical labor at some
welding,
point.
Welding, plumbers. I have a whole TEDx, Rick, that's basically like, my best friend's a plumber in a 4,000 person town. When his job is done, we got way bigger concerns than job concerns.
Oh, yeah.
Species dominance concerns at that point.
It really is. And as you said,
plumbers will be the last to go.
When you have 1 billion robots out there taking in experiential data, and not just, I mean, one of the problems right now with the large language models is they're running out of data.
Yeah,
I mean, they scraped the internet.
Smoking through the internet. You got to start touching the world.
Uh-huh.
Right? You got to start touching the world. You got to be running the pharmaceutical experiments up close and personal. You got to be building the machines up close and personal. You got to be walking around human houses and seeing human conversation up close and personal and shaking hands. And that's how they're going to drink in the real stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating question about how tactile experience in the world changes consciousness. And that's the other thing about it is it's like we have a society that is not just in America, but globally, religion has played a fundamental role in our societies for thousands of years. And it is going to confront religious belief at a level that I think is going to cause as you mentioned Qatar, there are and I know a lot of folks in the Gulf, and there is a fascination to become we want to become a digital Singapore. We want to get, you know, put all the, you know, we want to use the energy we have to buy as many H100s from NVIDIA as we can and become a global superpower of AI. And it's like, you all know you got a lot of people in your country that are not going to like this outcome.
Exactly right. Well, I actually, you bring up a great point. I mean, I wish well the persons who would hope that the God of their book would save them from the God made of sand.
Yeah.
I wish well for them, but I do suspect that prayer isn't as much of what we need as innovation and regulation. And to ask quite ardently, mm-hmm. How we should birth this thing, what would be a worthy successor, and sort of how do we do our best shake of making sure our individual consciousnesses don't get obliterated in the process. I think we need more of that currently than we do prayer.
I watch Washington right now struggling with AI, and they are just, these guys don't get it. They look, a lot of members of the Senate can barely use a smartphone, and a lot of members of the House are not your most advanced thinkers on anything. And it fascinates me that there will be a cultural and religious and economic struggle as this thing changes. And the weird part about it is, what happens if we start investing so much, AI becomes such a primary driver in our economy that it alters the perception of all of it? Look, we used to think in this country, you know, the thing that makes America great is steel and auto manufacturing. Those things are like third tier investments now, fourth tier investments now.
Yeah.
I mean, NVIDIA is rapidly becoming the most powerful corporation on the earth. People don't seem to understand that. The fangs, you know, there will be a moment where we look back, I think, on the big social media companies, big tech companies as brief little flickering artifacts. But there's going to be a massive set of you know, business and business-to-business contacts for the companies that are building the infrastructure around this, because it's going to require – a whole new infrastructure. And I suspect NVIDIA will eventually start getting some competition, because right, being the only source of these GPUs that are driving a lot of this innovation, that's a failure mode. And it's also a lack of – it's also missing an economic opportunity for a lot of companies. I'm interested in where that goes too.
What's the future? The future is mining ores.
Mm-hmm.
The future is power generation.
Mm-hmm.
The future is – the hardware in the compute and the data centers that run it, right? All the big data center companies, Equinix and all those guys, they're all going to have to, instead of like storing email files, right? They'll be doing inference and training, and they'll be making their cash off of where most compute is used, which is AI. So all of that stuff will have to blossom as this kind of virtual wave splashes over us. We start to live in these virtual spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have augmented reality, Rick, that'll sort of remind me when it's time to have lunch, and maybe at some point, maybe a machine that'll make the sandwich. But at some point, the generative AI immersion will be so complete, right? In order to follow up on my sales calls or even have a live sales call, I want to have those layers of value on top of reality to make sure that I can kind of understand the nuance of what they're doing and bring up the right objections or whatever the case may be. As we start becoming immersed in that stuff, the amount of computers is going to be gargantuan. I think, again, mining, power, hardware, data centers. And then I think you've got the ecosystem of folks that are going to drink in that first party data. So if I own the portal through which data gets piped out of human skulls and into my systems, mm-hmm. that's a position of power too. So I wouldn't write Facebook off entirely, right? Because if you're piping it off of faces, Rick, let me tell you, brother, if you're piping the most information out of the most human skulls for work, for pleasure, for entertainment, etc., that's how you build the big thing.
Mm.
And so Apple and Meta are definitely, you know, running and gunning for that as well. So I don't think they're out of the race. Again, I got an article called The Substrate Monopoly about who's going to capture value as this stuff happens. And I don't know for sure, but I happen to agree with you. It ain't going to be the auto manufacturers.
Right.
It's going to be this entirely new virtual first ecosystem.
Amazing. Well, Dan Fajella, I want to thank you so much for coming on the Enemies List today. Tell folks where they can read your work and catch up with you on social media.
Yeah, sure. Twitter is sort of where I hang out primarily when it comes to speaking about kind of the big stuff, where Rick, I know you hang out there quite a good deal as well.
At
Dan Fajella is pretty easy to find me, at Dan Fajella, or just danfajella.com. You know, that if anybody wants to Google substrate monopoly, or they want to Google something like political singularity we talked about here, Rick, those will take you right to the blog immediately if you just type in those keywords.
Fantastic.
And that's pretty much it. That's where folks can find us. Yeah, new podcast is out, new YouTube channel's out, but Twitter's really the locus for all that stuff. So catch me there. Tell me that Rick sent you, and I'll do a hat tip for you.
Well, Dan, let's stay in touch and talk again soon. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's been a pleasure, Rick.
So I'm recording this on Friday, the 5th of April, and today we had an earthquake in New York, and on Monday we're going to have an eclipse in Texas. Well, actually, throughout East Central U.S. all the way down to Texas. But this afternoon, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the sloth woman, the three-toe, Marge being large, decided today she would tweet out the following. God is sending America strong signs to tell us to repent. Earthquakes and eclipses and many more things to come. I pray our country listens. Listen, Marge, I get it that you are dumber than a sack of hammers at the dollar store. I get it that you are really not a person who thinks that the world operates under certain physics and natural principles. I understand that. But for the love of God, the God that you refer to in your tweet, earthquakes and eclipses are natural processes. Eclipses do not happen because of an angry God in the sky sending you a message, or anyone else for that matter. Earthquakes happen because of shifting tectonic plates beneath the surface of the earth. They also are not messages from God. If they were, then you would know it. If they were, there would be something supernatural following it. But these are not supernatural events. These are natural events. And the fact that you're out stoking the fear of your crazy followers is definitely one more of 1,000 reasons you're on the enemy's list. And March, by the way, since we're going to rock it biblically today, I will now throw out a little bit of something I remember from my divinity classes as a young man. March, if there's a biblical reference here that really springs to mind, it's Revelations 17:5. Look it up, because you are on the enemy's list. Thanks again for listening to The Enemies List. If you have any comments, questions, or if there's someone you'd like to hear on the podcast, hit me up on Twitter at TheRickWilson. Thanks again for the wonderful support you've shown the pod. We're growing fast. It really helps if you will share this with your friends, your family, and anyone else who, like us, is trying to save democracy. While you're at it, if you could rate and review the podcast, I would be very much appreciative. I know this is the sort of thing you've heard a billion times. Please rate, review, like, blah, blah, blah. But you need to do it. It really does help us a lot. We are slaves to the algorithm, my friends. And if you do this, it will help get the pod out further. Anyway, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time. And remember, whatever you do, stay off the list.